You can sure throw a party and a half.
Baron Silas Hunter found it hard to smile in reply, just wanting them to pass out as quickly as possible. He had started the revelry as soon as the first Baron had arrived, and had so managed to deflect any awkward questions. But unless they hit the tables in unconsciousness soon, he wouldn't be able to carry out his plan. More jolt, more alcohol, more girls. Eventually he found that he was the only one in the room able to focus. Now was the time to slip away. By the time his task had been carried out, they'd all be comatose, and he'd be in the clear, he hoped. Mile watched the companions leave the Sec camp as the sun began to sink, and another night descended on the compound. McVee joined his chief at the doorway to the mess hall, where Mile had been completing new duty rosters and worrying about the meeting of the Barons that was taking place back in Salvation.
You reckon they've got any chance of stopping this, Chief?
I don't know. I would have said so at one point, but after last night, I don't know if any of us have got a chance of stopping it, especially if we can't work out who the hell it is and how they get out of the camp at night.
Maybe they don't. You know, J.B. has this idea.
Yeah, I know. Trouble is, that just gives us a whole new set of problems rather than solving the old ones.
And how many more problems do we need, right?
Exactly.
Mile turned back toward his pokey office.
Anyway, I've got to get these rosters done. We'll need to look really on the ball when Baron Silas brings the other boys over tomorrow for a look around. Got to look on the ball.
Even if we ain't.
The companions rode in silence away from the Sec camp and across the desert to the worksite. It was far enough in the gloom for them to change their positions without anyone being able to spy on them from either camp and give the game away, particularly as they shunned the use of lamps to light their way, unlike the regular Sec patrols. Before they parted to take their mounts to the expected positions, then change to the new points on foot, Ryan stopped and turned to his people.
This is the big one. If we're right, then we nail it down tonight. We need to get Silas, and the best way is to get one of these Coldheart Mercies alive and get him to tell his story to the other Barons. Otherwise, they'll figure we're in it with him and Silas, and chill us all without a second thought.
There was a moment's silence while they considered that. Then J.B. looked at the position of the rising crescent moon.
Better get to it before we miss them.
The simplest part of the plan was to tether their mounts in the positions they were supposed to have taken, and then make their way to their revised places. In the darkness that rapidly fell when the sun set, there was plenty of shadow for them to move silently. That wasn't their problem. For each, it would be a matter of finding a hiding place where they could observe what was going on, and also keep out of sight until the moment of optimum surprise. For Doc and Dean, there was also the matter of teaming up and making sure that they knew where the other was. If there was trouble, they didn't want to chill or endanger each other by accident. So it was that both the young Carter and the prematurely aged Doc Tanner found themselves approaching the refinery buildings from different angles, keeping a sharp lookout for each other. Dean saw a shadow moving across between the two smaller buildings, keeping to the line of the covered walkway. He cut across from his position until he intersected the other figure's path, except that the other figure had vanished. Dean's finger tightened instinctively on the delicate trigger of the Browning high power as he scanned the darkness, straining for the slightest sound.
By the three Kennedys, you will have to do better than that.
Even though he knew it was Doc, Dean still dropped to one side, rolling as he hit the ground and coming up in a combat stance, only just stopping himself from firing.
Oh, hot pipe, Doc, don't do that.
Doc emerged from the shadows, Lama in one hand and swordstick in the other. He was shaking his mane of white hair from side to side as he entered the dim light.
I could have taken you out right there and then. Please be careful when the enemy arrives, as I would not like to have to explain to your father how you were chilled.
Dean cursed himself for being caught. But like a true Carter, he would learn from the experience.
Fair point, Doc. So how are we going to take this?
I would suggest we cover a section each, and perhaps have some kind of signal to warn each other of our own approach during a tactical situation, to avoid any more confusion.
I'll take these two buildings. You take the larger, as it's less ground all around. And we'll just yell. In combat, who the hell is going to hear a bird call?
As you wish.
Suddenly, Doc's attention was snatched away by the sound of Wags approaching.
Let's do it, and now.
Dean moved back into the shadows. Doc nodded his agreement, and with a surprising turn of speed for one seemingly so old, he too vanished into the darkness. Although there were other wags audible in the distance, only one sped into the gap between the two refinery blocks, skidding to a halt. It had three occupants, a driver and two others, who jumped out as soon as the wag halted. On either side of the gap, Dean and Doc couldn't believe their luck, as they were able to completely cover the wag and its occupants. Mindful of Ryan's words, Doc chose to speak from the shadows.
If you will kindly put down your weapons, we will desist from chilling you.
There was only a fraction of a second of stunned silence, although it seemed to be much longer, before the angry explosion of an Uzi on rapid fire. The driver rose from his seat to level the fire in Doc's direction. It was short-lived, as Dean took him out with a single shot from the Browning that took away a chunk of the back of his skull. One of the saboteurs yelled to his companion,
"Fuck it! There's more than one!"
The two men, having already left the wag, had flung themselves into cover, or what they assumed was cover, against the side of the wag farthest from the direction of Doc's voice, which made them perfect targets for Dean. The man who hadn't spoken swung himself around in the dirt and rose to run for cover, expecting covering fire from his companion. When it failed to emerge, he swung his own blaster around and loosed a couple of rounds in Dean's direction. Doc aimed from the shadows and fired the shot charge from the Lamar. The roar of the blaster echoed by the agonized yell of the saboteur as the shot ripped into his body. But the yell itself was lost in the louder sound of an explosion. The saboteur had to have been carrying Plasex on his body, ready to plant it within the confines of the refinery buildings. The shot from Doc's Lamar had hit the explosive and detonated it, causing the body of the saboteur to disintegrate in a ball of flame that lit the entire area between the buildings.
Oh, shit!
Dean threw himself flat to escape the rain of debris that ensued as the force of the blast detonated Plasex that was on the other saboteur, still taking cover by the wag, taking him out in a blaze of flame and causing the wag to explode as its fuel tank overheated and combusted. The triple explosions deafened Dean and Doc as they took cover and hoped that no stray piece of debris should by chance chill them. It seemed like forever before the world returned to some semblance of calm. The only light was from the burning wag, and the only sound was the crackling of flames. Dean and Doc, now both safe from any debris and certainly safe from any threat from the now chilled saboteurs, emerged from their respective covers and met in the middle, standing together to watch the fire begin to die as the fuel was used.
So much for taking prisoners.
Jack had arrived at his position with little trouble. Moving silently and swiftly was second nature for the born hunter, and so it presented him no problem to find his way along the pipeline without being spotted. The pipelines running from the refinery to the storage tanks were straight, with little or no cover provided, particularly at the vulnerable point that Jack was to guard. This was a series of valves and small pipe fittings that joined the two sections, and the shape of the construction meant that the whole piece jutted out into the desert, presenting a plain target with no recesses in which to take any kind of cover. Or almost none. Within the maze of pipes, there was a small gap, but Jack was small, lithe and supple, and used to keeping still for long periods of time. He forced himself into the tiny gap and settled down to wait, easing his cramped muscles with exercises taught to him by his hunter father that prevented him from either becoming stiff or from having to move out into the open to stretch. He slowed his breathing, making each breath deeper but spaced further and further apart. And he settled to watch and listen, his red eyes sharp in the darkness, his ears alert for the slightest sound out of the ordinary. And so it was that, as before, he was the first to hear the wags. He was aware of the handset sitting heavy on his hip, but he was unwilling to use it. Ryan had wanted them to maintain as much of a radio silence as possible in case of eavesdropping. The others would hear the wag soon enough in the quiet of the desert night. The only thing that concerned Jack was being ready for the wag that would come his way, for he had no doubts that Ryan and JB were correct, and that the five vulnerable points would be those that were hit. So Jack stayed patient and silent, keeping his senses alert. One of them was headed toward him. He exercised his supple muscles, easing all signs of strain and cramp from them. He had to be ready for them when they arrived, which would be only a matter of seconds. the wag rolled across the dark earth, silhouetted against the lighter sky. Jack could see from his position that there were only two occupants in the wag. They wouldn't be able to see him, as they were showing no lights in an attempt to disguise their position.